I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to discuss both a new documentary, Farmers for America, and the future of farming in this country. We're going to talk about small farms, big farms, urban farms, all things farming and farmers. My guests are filmmaker Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, journalist, small farmer, and representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, Indy Urban Acres of Indy Parks farmer. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimitswfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a new documentary film called Farmers for America that is premiering this week in Indianapolis at two different discussion events at the Indianapolis City Market. We're also going to be talking just about farming in general, the future of farming, and the changes that are taking place in the field right now. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are filmmaker Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, who is a journalist, small farmer, and representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, who's a farmer with Indy Urban Acres, part of Indy Parks. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
I think probably to set up the conversation and, you know, also to kind of tease the premiere, frankly, this week of the film, Farmers for America, the filmmakers graciously have allowed us to play the trailer, the audio from it anyway, and I think that's will help set up the conversation. So we'll listen to that now.
Tomorrow morning, farmers all across America will wake up long before the sun rises and go outside and work. They'll grind feed, water, deliver, seed, tow a friend out of the mud, and help a mama cow calve.
You're all legs there, buddy.
There's a strength and pride that awakens within us when we think about these people, these stewards of our earth. And yet, tomorrow morning, farmers will face more than just the daily chores.
The average American farmer is now 60 years old. In the next 15 years, 50% of America's agriculture equity is going to change hands. Think about that a moment.
You can't freeze rural America in amber, you know.
One out of every five bites an American takes was grown outside of the United States.
It almost becomes impossible to enter farming.
Generation of people is sort of waking up to the fact that, wow, it is a lot more fun to farm than having a desk job.
They're interested, they want to connect with their food, they want to learn about raising animals and growing vegetables.
It's just been a dream come true to wake up every morning and really enjoy what you're doing.
The family put up the land for sale and I thought I was going to have a chance, then came the price.
I've been living on the farm my whole life. Grandpa saw that there wasn't enough money to sustain the family, so he went and got a job at General Motors.
I was with a bunch of guys from New York, D.C., Baltimore. They told me about farmers markets.
We have the baby now, and I know that they spray the hell out of potatoes.
A lot of our customers are young families with small children. You know, they're just bringing them into the world, and they want to raise them healthy and raise them right.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
One of the things that we said we wanted to do was to make some American flags.
At the twilight,
America stands at a moment of truth. Who will own our farmland?
I know that I'm going to be doing this for the next 35, 40 years to be able to purchase a piece of land here in Weston.
Who will grow our food?
Social media is the easiest, most accessible way for people to get to know their farmers.
End of the day. We've got to put a little hashtag in there, too.
Where will this next generation of farmers come from?
I believe in the future of agriculture with a faith born not of words but of deeds.
The number one thing I think a young farmer needs, it's a chance, an opportunity to take what we have and offer it to the world.
For the land of the free and the home of the brave.
That was the trailer for the new documentary film, Farmers for America. I have in the studio with me the filmmaker, Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, who's a journalist, small farmer, and representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, who's a farmer with Indy Urban Acres, Indy Parks. Graham, some people are probably trying to figure out where they heard the voice for the narration before. Rather familiar voice.
Yeah, we were very lucky to get Mike Rowe to lend his talents to the film, and that was a choice that was very deliberate. He's a guy that's dedicated his on-screen and off-screen time to promoting skilled jobs and farmers and welders and things like that. So to have someone who celebrates people who are often forgotten and underappreciated be the voice of our film was a great honor.
What drew you to doing the film?
Well, I directed a documentary called American Meat, and that film was all about chicken, cattle, and hog production in America. And so we did 220 screenings around the country with that film, where I was actually going to those screenings and talking to people, and across the board everyone was saying the same thing, which was young farmers are facing some real challenges here. And so as that became clear to me that that was the number one issue for farmers and for agriculture in America, I made the decision to direct my second film about these issues relating to young people in agriculture.
And what did you find?
Well, a lot.
And we've got a couple of examples here. Yeah. Don't worry. I'm going to pull them into the conversation in a second.
Sure. We found so much. It's really a unique moment in American agricultural history. We have the average age of the U.S. farmer is 60 years old. In the next 12 years, 50% of America's farmland is going to change ownership. So we really have this vital moment where it's a defining moment for our agriculture. And so it's a very exciting time, and it's also a time that's ripe for change.
And it sounds like loaded with challenge. So Sherry and Tyler, because this is not a visual medium, people cannot tell that you are both significantly below that average age of 60 here. Sherry, what challenges do you find in farming right now as someone who is a younger farmer and made a deliberate choice to go into farming?
Absolutely. I see a lot of access to land problems for our young farmers, as were evidenced in the film that Graham created. There's a lot of problems with simple things like, you know, our health care is a big conversation right now. So young farmers, if they want to go try to start up a small farm and to be able to feed their neighbors and feed their families well, they can't get access to health care. They can't get access to the land. They have problems even establishing a business and learning how to run that business and learning the food safety guidelines that are involved. There's a lot of tape, you know, red tape involved in terms of starting your own farm, and there's a huge learning curve. I'm a perfect example of that because I have media, as you mentioned, in my background, and coming, you know, to a place in my life where it meant more to me to be on the land and to be taking care of the land and to learn how to feed myself well and to learn how to feed our neighbors and our community and our family well. Those are huge learning curves if you're not, you know, if you don't grow up in it. I grew up on the south side of Indianapolis, so I didn't have that background to automatically help feed my knowledge for how to do this and how to do it well.
When you talk about access to land, what do you mean?
It's expensive.
Being able to buy it.
It's very expensive. And so your young farmers are either going to be able to rent, they're going to look for renting opportunities, or they're going to try to find credit, you know, somewhere. If they don't have credit built up already, good credit, that bank isn't going to really loan them the money. If they don't have any business background, if they don't show that they know how to run a business, those are all obstacles that, you know, we have to be able to, especially as these older farmers are getting out of the business, the farm succession plan, if they don't have someone who is going to want to come in and be able to take over that land, we have to feed all of these people, you know, all of these families who are around us. And if we don't have somebody to take over that land and to be able to purchase it from them, we've got a huge problem.
What accounts for this problem? Is it to some degree a product of urban sprawl? I mean, I'm thinking
that's part of the problem. Is that they retail the development. They base that land price on can we get, you know, a million more from a developer who's going to come in and put a neighborhood in there.
Yeah.
So whenever you're looking at it that way, a small farmer has no ground to stand on.
But
literally,
at some level, that's driven. You know, we have done several shows on sort of the return of urban farming here in Indianapolis and elsewhere. Tyler, you're part of that movement. Has the fact that being pushed further and further out made us turn inward at some level?
Well, I definitely think so. That, I mean, really, you have to look at the food system over, look at it through the lens of decades. We've gone into a system of big agriculture. You know, and the age-old argument is how are we going to feed the world? Big ag, small agriculture, organic versus non-organic. And the bottom line is that neither one are doing a good job. In Marion County, we've got close to 200,000 people that are going through hunger. So I think that we've got to look back to examples that have worked. And small-scale agriculture has had a track record of hundreds, if not thousands of years of being able to feed their community.
So, and often I know with these discussions, it boils down to an either or. You know, it's small farm or big farm or whatever. It's interesting, though, most of that conversation seems to come from outside the fraternity of farming. Most farmers don't divide themselves that way. Has that been your perception as well, Graham, in talking with them?
Absolutely. You find that so often there'll be one of the farmers we filmed with who actually didn't make it into the final cut of the film, but he's a wonderful farmer, Johnny Glosson. He's a chicken farmer in Siler City, North Carolina, and he raises chickens in the conventional manner for Pilgrim's Pride as a contract farmer. And then he also raises a bunch of hogs that he sells directly to his community. So there's a lot of farmers that sort of have their foot in both worlds, and most farmers are people who just want to help out their neighbor. They want to feed people, and they're not too interested in labels and creating conflict where it's not necessary.
We are talking about a new documentary called Farmers for America that premieres this week in Indianapolis. But more generally, we're talking about farming and the future of farming. If you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can find us on Twitter at WFYI. You can call us at 866-476-3881, or you can send us an email, as our regular listener Jerry has done. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, "I am old enough to remember when Indiana produced more wheat than soybeans, and I have family connections to the evolution of Hoosier agriculture. Despite some bright spots like urban farming and the movement to organic, environmentally friendly farming, the major development has been the demise of the family farm and the rise of agribusiness. The latter emphasizes increased automation and large-scale intensive land use. Concomitantly, there has been a sharp reduction in the value of traditional farm labor and an unprecedented concentration of agricultural wealth into the hands of fewer and fewer citizens. Could the panel please comment upon the relationship between the growth of agribusiness and the increase in poverty, environmental degradation, drug abuse, and suicide in rural Indiana communities?" Jerry, I don't think we're going to get that done before the break, but I'll give Tyler the first crack at it, and then we will pick it up after the break.
Sure. So, you know, Graham had mentioned that farms are going to change hands drastically over the next, I think, 10, 12 years. And who is that going to be? Is it going to be to people that are trying to feed their community? We see that I think Marion County has something like half of the total acreage is farmed by agribusiness, extremely large farms over 1,000 acres. And these are people that the bottom line is the most important thing. I think, you know, going back in to our community, you know, we had a mom-and-pop grocery store. We had the hardware store. These have all been replaced by big businesses where you don't know your grocer. You don't know the people that are roofing your house, and you don't know the people that are growing your food. And I think people in the community are kind of demanding that we want more of a say on who grows our food and what we're putting into our body. It is a business, but it's the only business that I know of that everyone in the world is forced to participate in if you want to live. And people look at it in a more personal aspect.
We are talking about a new documentary film called Farmers for America today on No Limits. My guests are filmmaker Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, a journalist, small farmer, and representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, Indy Urban Acres farmer. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about a new documentary film, Farmers for America, that's going to be premiering this week in Indianapolis at two different discussion events at the Indianapolis City Market. My guests are filmmaker Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, who is a journalist, small farmer, and a representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, who's a farmer with Indy Urban Acres, Indy Parks. Before we went to the break, Jerry, our regular listener, sent us a question about really some of the ramifications of the rise of agribusiness and the decline of the small family farm. Tyler took the first crack at it, but I think I'll offer Sherry a chance to speak to the question, too.
Well, I think, first of all, I think Jerry's right. I think a lot of what he mentioned in there is really what's happening. And we're at a critical point in terms of what's going to happen into our future. Our rural communities are essentially suffering. Our high schools are shutting down. The rural hospitals are shutting down. There are, as Tyler mentioned, no hardware stores, no grocery stores. There are a lot of these things. In my town where I live, there's nothing left, essentially, of what used to be. And that is, in my mind, and from what I speak to a lot, is the industrialized agriculture and industrialized life that we've created here in terms of these monopolies that are not only happening in food and farming, but also in a lot of other areas. There are four major meat packers that basically dominate the meat industry in the world. So you're talking about having almost zero choice in what you eat. If you, you know, if you're not working with your neighbor, if you're not working with the farmer down the street, you don't understand what's being put into that meat that you're eating, that you're feeding your children, that you're feeding your grandchildren. And I think that's an issue that is so important to the future of our world, not only environmentally, but then also, you know, to our rural communities, to the health of our rural communities and to the health of our future. I think that's a big question.
What I hear coming out of this, and Graham, I'm going to ask if, you know, if this was what you found in what amounts to your reporting in terms of doing the film. Two themes here. One, transparency, mm-hmm. Being able to see where everything comes from that you put into not just your body but the bodies of those that you love, and also the sense of community, breakdown of community ties. Is that, were those recurring themes, motifs, in the discussions you had while you were making the film?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, as Tyler and Sherry have said, the main streets in rural America are hurting. There's a lot of ghost towns. One thing that you'll see that's very common is you'll have three different towns that all lost so much population that they no longer can keep a high school going. So they combine their high schools, and then so you have high schools that are named Stevenson, Livonia, Amberton High School. And so I think there's a number of factors that have led to this. One of the big factors is technology. When you have a combine that can farm 2,000 acres or 4,000 acres, you can have one person farming thousands and thousands of acres. And so it gets to the point where you used to have a bunch of families on a section of land, now you just have one family. And so as the technology has gotten bigger and bigger, we've gotten to a point where there's less and less space in rural America for farm families, and that has devastated the rural economy.
It's changed the business model in some ways, but also the cultural model. We are talking about farming. The hook for the conversation is the premiere of a new documentary film called Farmers for America that will be premiering this week in Indianapolis at the Indianapolis City Market. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Margaret has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Margaret, you're on the air.
I realize that in just a few minutes I've been listening while waiting for my call, for you to take my call. This is a totally redundant comment, but I just want to make sure that you draw the distinction between the industrial, agro-industrial industry or the sector and what we think of as the romantic family farms. I don't think that distinction is known or recognized in the Indiana State Legislature. But, you know, I think of the book Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma and Jane Smiley's trilogy On Some Luck, talking about how our farming has evolved from the truck farmer, where you made grew squash and a little bit of corn and some cucumbers and tomatoes, to now you do acres and acres and acres of corn that goes into non-food production, and acres of soybeans that goes into non-food production. But we think of, oh, that's farming, so we have to protect it, and I want to make sure that we distinguish that kind of farming from that which is what I feed my family, what's in my refrigerator now. But you've already, obviously your guests are already on that. I just didn't listen enough before I made my call.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the call, Margaret.
I will actually say, though, she's right. A lot of people, I think it's important that she did make that distinction, because a lot of people don't know that distinction. When they're thinking about, you know, supporting farming, they don't actually know what that, you know, romanticized idea of a family farm means. They don't understand what industrial farming is, you know, versus a small family farmer who's trying to be a good neighbor, who's trying to treat the land well, who's trying to treat the animals well, and who's trying to grow food that's healthy for us, that isn't full of antibiotics and other, you know, hormones and those types of things that can ultimately make us sick.
Is there, and I guess I'm trying to get to a challenge here, because in some ways I think, Graham, the thing you mentioned about how now it's possible for a single person to farm thousands of acres, and normally, and that is a product of the fact that you know, technology has exploded. There are many labor-saving devices that were in many ways unimaginable a century ago or longer. That trend, and in some ways that's a good thing. You know, we all benefit from labor-saving devices. I'm sure we're all glad we didn't have to walk, you know, several miles to get to this studio, or that, frankly, we're standing out on a street shouting this conversation, rather that we can use microphones and all of that. But I'm thinking of a passage in Hillary Clinton's new book, where she talked about how, you know, the future of driverless cars is not that far away. And that sounds great, because we think about all the time that's going to be freed up. On the other hand, it also means that lots of truck drivers, cab drivers, now Uber drivers, and bus drivers are going to be put out of work, that an entire industry is going to be hammered. In some ways, Tyler, I can see you leaning in. Is that what happened with farming?
Well, you have to look at the rise of agribusiness, and you have to look at the rise of big box stores as something that we've created. As a society, we've decided that we at some point valued low prices above anything else. Agribusiness has given us cheap food. Because of cheap food, it's given us high rates of diabetes, high rates of obesity, the health problems. We can go to these big box stores and not support local farming and local food because the prices are cheaper. But what we have to realize is that those savings ultimately have a cost to yourself through health. And it's got a societal cost to it, that the small family farm, the romanticized version of a family coming together and working the farm together and making a living and feeding their community is gone. Mm-hmm. It is a business. Agribusiness is just that. It is a business. And with any business, unfortunately, the bottom line trumps people.
I've gotten a question via Facebook, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. This is from a listener named Elizabeth. Elizabeth writes, one study found the insect biomass has declined by 75% over the past 25 years. This can be directly attributed to the widespread use of pesticides by big agribusiness. How can we stop this before we're all doomed to a world without insect pollinators and food chain sources? And everyone, it's like a classroom. Everyone is avoiding eye contact at this moment.
I wouldn't avoid that. I'm talky, so let me talk. I participate in the Agriculture Advisory Councils for the Humane Society of the United States. And that, you know, when you're talking to farmers, that sometimes scares them because the Humane Society scares them. But the Humane Society is doing so many good things for family farmers. And they have connected through my participation in those councils. I have met some of the country's leading farm and food advocates that are, you know, working in D.C. and doing these things. And those coalitions, National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, and there's so many National Family Farm Coalition and the National Farmers Union, and there's so many different organizations out there that are fighting for what she's talking about. I mean, we are in dire trouble. I hate to be negative because I'm so optimistic in my life and the things that I do because I'm so joyous at the people that I've gotten to meet and that I'm working with, because there are good intentioned people out there. We are trying to change the system, but because of what's going on, that's why that shows like this matter, because we need to talk about the issues and that people need to understand that if they're buying this cheap meat, if they're buying this cheap food that's filled with high fructose corn syrup, they need to understand the repercussions of that. We vote with our dollars. If we're not out there, you know, I go to D.C. to lobby. But if you're not in D.C. with me, right next to me, you're voting by shopping at Walmart and buying what you buy. And not everyone shops at Walmart. I'm not pinpointing them. But I'm just saying, when you make those decisions and you're not buying locally from your small farmer who also goes to their small businesses in their community and puts that money back into the community, those are decisions that are going to affect our future.
Gotten an email from a listener that speaks, I think, to Tyler's point. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. This listener writes, animal agriculture is the greatest contributor to global climate change. Animal-based diets are the number one cause of preventable disease in America. Our government should subsidize produce for human consumption, not animal and not fuel. Government should tax animal products heavily to contribute to the disease these products cause, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, and on. Thoughts, Tyler?
Well, I'm the person that emailed is right, but I think that the rise of meat consumption has to be traced to the rise of cheap meat. Mm-hmm. We've made it so that it's much cheaper to get a cheeseburger at a fast food place than it is to get high quality produce. And, you know, we talk about food access issues and the people that in Marion County that simply can't afford to feed their family and they're trying to get as many calories as possible to their family. You have no choice but to go for the cheapest things. And that has health repercussions. I mean, the rates of childhood obesity and childhood diabetes is skyrocketing. And that can be directly traced to diet. And you just follow the dots, and that goes back to cheap meat. If you want to have a plant-based diet, if you want to have a plant-based diet and feed your family the highest quality food you can, for so many tens of thousands of people in our community, they simply don't have access to it, and that's a shame.
We are talking about farming and farmers in anticipation of the premiere of the new documentary Farmers for America here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Certainly.
Once again, my comments are similar to previous calls and similar shows. I think how we got to this point, there's a magazine called Acres USA, which I recommend to anyone small farming who tries to get into it. I myself have been an organic farmer for about 34 years now, and used to raise beef cattle, very high quality grass fed, no hormones, no growth hormones, no antibiotics, no steroids, and everybody loved the product. I no longer do that. I got busy with other things. My wife still farms, has an herb farm there on the farm, and does the city market in Indianapolis. The way we got to this point is in large part by NAFTA and Big Biz. Big Biz wanted to be able to enter the stock market with knowledge of how much grain was going to be produced, be it corn, soybeans, whatever, so that they could sell it on the market. And therefore, they control the prices. And in order to control the prices, they need to control who's growing what. And they did that by going to agribiz, big biz, and squeezing out the small farmers, which, as was pointed out, we end up with large high schools where nobody knows anybody or knows who their kids are hanging out with, and churches dry up and die, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the best way I see to reverse that is what I mentioned once before. I believe it's the state of Maine. They are subsidizing people who want to get into small farming. How you control the prices, considering we have a $10 an hour minimum wage now, for a lot of people, they can't afford the higher prices. What the politicians never mentioned anymore is the inflation that we have in this country. And if you're going to pay the farmers what they're worth, what their product is worth, you know, you go out to eat and you're going to pay $14 for a meal per person. How much of that $14 does the farmer get? Not very much. And how you reverse that, the only way I can see is, like I say, as they're doing, I think it's Maine, subsidize the small farmers. And Charles Walters was not only a publisher of that Acres USA magazine, but he was also an economist. And as was mentioned, he pointed out how, you know, 1,000 acres used to have, 10 farmers on 1,000 acres and 10 farming families, and now you've only got one. I'm not sure whether technology followed it.
We're coming up on a break, and I want to give Sherry a chance to respond.
Let me say one thing, John.
Real quick, Ron.
Mahatma Gandhi, my favorite quote, what I object to is not machinery as such, but so-called labor-saving machinery. Men go on saving labor until thousands are thrown in the streets to die of starvation. Thank you, John.
Thanks very much for the call, Ron. Okay, Sherry.
I would agree with him. Actually, I think that NAFTA did have a large part to play in what the state of farming has become today. I think the price floors were taken out for our corn and bean farmers, and they were encouraged to, you know, overproduce. They still are overproducing. We have a lot of corn that we don't know what to do with, so we're dropping it in ways, you know, that aren't necessary, and that corn is being grown so that we can feed cattle, which he was talking about with the meat, you know, the focus on meat. And I have personal opinions about that. I don't believe that meat is the way that we feed our world. That discussion, you know, could go on for hours. But I think that a lot of the things that the government has done to try to help large agribusinesses has really hurt the family farmer.
We are talking about farming and farmers on No Limits today. The hook for the conversation is a new documentary called Farmers for America that's going to be premiering this week at the Indianapolis City Market with two different discussion events. We're going to talk about that when we come back after the break. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, and Tyler Goff. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about farming and farmers today on No Limits in anticipation of the premiere of the new documentary film, Farmers for America. It's going to be premiering with a couple of events later this week at the Indianapolis City Market. My guests are the filmmaker Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, who is a small farmer, a journalist, and representative for the Indiana Farmers Union, and Tyler Goff, who also is a farmer with Indy Urban Acres, Indy Parks. Probably we've gone pretty far in the conversation. We ought to tell people about the premiere itself, when the events are, you know, if they want to attend, see the film, and talk about some of these issues a little further and in person.
Sure.
How do they do that?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to be premiering the film during the week of the FFA National Convention. So there's 65,000 young people here who are interested in farming.
Yeah, I've already seen a lot of blue jackets around town. So.
The swarm of blue jackets is upon us.
Yeah.
And so we're doing a screening Thursday night that starts at 6. There's going to be local Indiana food from local Indiana farmers. There's also going to be craft beer, Indiana beer. And then at 7, the film's going to start around 8:15. When the film wraps up, we're going to have a conversation with some of the farmers who are in the film, like Matthew Keener and Amber Epsi, who are driving in from Dayton, Ohio. And we also have the Brownleys, who are part of the Indiana Young Farmers Coalition, and their Indiana farmers that'll be on that panel. We also have someone on the National FFA Board, Matthew Eddy, who is an ag ed teacher, because ag ed teachers are a really important part of this whole equation for our next generation of farmers. And then Friday night, it's the same thing. We have another group of panelists, Kenneth Georgia, who you heard in the trailer. He's flying in from Mississippi. He's an ag ed teacher in Tallah County, Mississippi. We also have Mike Lewis, who is a hemp farmer in Kentucky who's growing American flags from hemp, and he's a military veteran. So it's a pretty special story to see military veterans who served our nation growing hemp and then turning that hemp into an American flag. And then we have Colonel Chastain, Cindy Chastain of the Indiana Farmer Veteran Coalition. Mm-hmm. She's going to be at this panel, and she's a very inspiring woman who served our country and is now working with the Indiana Farmer Veteran Coalition. And we also have Stephen Brosius, who is a former National FFA officer, and I'll be there as well both evenings. So it'll be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of wonderful local food, local beer, probably some wine, and a great conversation about the past, the present, and the promise of American agriculture.
And what time does this start, and is there a cost?
The food and so on starts at 6. The film starts at 7, and then the panel discussion starts at 8. And, yeah, the tickets are $10. You can get the tickets at farmersforamericafilm.com. And if you happen to be a member of the Indiana Farmers Union or the Indiana Young Farmers Coalition or the Indiana Farmer Veteran Coalition, or you're an FFA student or an ag ed teacher, send me an email through our website, and we'll give you a promotional code so that it's half off for you.
And did you settle on Indy for the premiere because of the convention? Was that the hook? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a very unconventional distribution model with our film. We don't apply to any film festivals, and we bring the film directly to the places where it's most relevant. And so we decided with a film that's about young farmers and the challenges they face and the joys that they share, we want to bring it to the National FFA Convention with 65,000 young people who are interested in agriculture. And then from there, we're going to do hundreds and hundreds of grassroots screenings across the country in states all across the country.
We are talking about farming and farmers in anticipation of the premiere that Graham just talked about of Farmers for America, a new documentary. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Joe has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
And first of all, I want to just tell you how much gratitude I have for the job that you and Shannon and company have brought this show to so far. I'm really happy with it.
Well, thank you.
I'm kind of curious. I live in the same community as Sherry does. I'm your neighbor, actually. Hi, Sherry.
I wondered if it was you, Joe.
But I want to bolster. I'm probably a little bit more of an alarmist. What she's talking about is Morristown, a town that thus far historically hasn't been big enough to sustain a school system all the way through high school, but has no grocery store. Dollar General does not qualify. But at any rate, you know, that's something we all need to be concerned with, 10, 12 miles in either direction to get to a grocery store for this community. But, Sherry, what I'm talking about with you today is, and I don't want to open up a hornet's nest with subsidies from USDA to large farms, but I want to know what's going on with legislation down the pipe for small farmers.
Thanks very much for the call, Joe.
Yep.
Sherry, I think that one's pitched toward
you.
Okay.
Joe's put me on the spot. No. Yeah. I think right now that's a big question. The farm bill is in heavy discussion. I know that I think it was about 60 organizations sent a letter to the USDA, signed on to talk about the different things that they want to see in the farm bill for small farmers. They want to see more money coming in. And I think the threat here is that there might be a lot more money being taken out, as has been evidenced from some of the other decisions our current administration has made. So I think there's a lot on the line in terms of, you know, where's the money going to go? What's it going to go toward? Who are we going to be supporting? And are we going to be finding ways to help these small farmers get land, get access to markets, you know, get rid of some of this concentration, you know, in production and see what we can do to help our future farmers be able to make it and to be able to support these small rural communities that don't indeed have grocery stores. Most of them do have Dollar Generals, and that is not a good source for healthy, fresh, locally grown food.
I want to throw this to all three of you because I want to pick up on sort of the point you were talking about the current administration, but mm-hmm. this at some level has been a persistent problem. And I'm thinking, you know, I was trained as
it's not new.
An historian, and I think it was in John F. Kennedy's cabinet, the very last cabinet member chosen was the Secretary for Agriculture. And, you know, someone asked one of Kennedy's advisors why that was and said, well, we think maybe it's because Harvard doesn't have a school of agriculture. That there is this cultural, social barrier here. And in this case, many of the presidents, many of the people we send to Congress, less so probably at the State House, are in many ways disconnected from rural America and agricultural lifestyles. Is that part of the problem, is that they just don't know this world? Tyler, and then I'm going to throw it to Graham. Don't worry. I know everybody. I could see the body language. Everybody was leaning in on that one, wanted to get to the mic. Tyler, you go first.
Well, I think when you talk about production and consumption, you always have to keep your eyes on Washington. This farm bill, looking through the lens of the people that we're leaving behind in our food system, we're going to lose millions of meals through reductions in food stamps. That's shameful. It's time for us as a community to put value in feeding people and to put value into making the production of good food a priority. And once we do that, I think that those sounds will move on to Washington, D.C., but you have to keep your eyes peeled of what's going on in Capitol Hill, because this farm bill, it's going to leave a lot of people behind.
Graham.
Yeah, I think there's a big problem in our country with the way that farmers and people in rural America are perceived. What you're getting at, the type of better-than-thou terminology used by some of the liberal elites to say things like, you know, there should be a Secretary of Agriculture from Harvard School of Agriculture. Well, the reality is that farmers do the work every day that allows everyone else in this country to do what they do. And so I think there's a real problem, and that's something that Mike Rowe has tapped into very effectively in our culture, where we don't appreciate the people in rural America who are the foundational people of our culture. Without them getting up every day to milk the cows at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, to ride the combine through the night, we don't have the food that keeps us going. And so it's very important when we have this conversation about America's Next Agriculture that we're respectful of all farmers and that we appreciate farmers in our country. When we sit down to eat at night, we need to say thanks to our farmers, because farmers grow the food that we eat, and it should be in our mind. And we should really be very celebratory of the work that they do, because without them, we don't exist.
To be fair, I think, since I pulled up the Kennedy quote, I don't think, if I remember the context right, that it was JFK had contempt for farmers. It was just literally, there was no part of his background that had brought him in contact with them in any way. It was a world he simply didn't know or understand.
Sure, but I think when you look at, you know, during the election, I saw the presidential election, I saw repeated op-eds that said non-educated whites or so on are voting for Trump. And just that phrase, non-educated, is incredibly offensive, because just because someone didn't go to college doesn't mean that they're not smart. You know, some of these farmers I spent time with, they just graduated high school. They didn't go to college, but they're running multi-million dollar farms, and they're very smart people that can fix a tractor, that can run a farm. And if you think of people who, the only educated people in our culture, people that went to college, you totally misunderstand the way that life works.
Yeah. Turned out also those were wrong. It was college-educated whites who also voted primarily for Trump, too. Sherry, do you want to weigh in? I'll give you the last word.
I believe, I think I read that 22 of the appointed positions that he's filled so far were of his campaign supporters and not people from who are actually knowledgeable in what he's asking them to do. So I think that's a huge part of the problem. And I think the only thing I want to say here is that I believe it's 1.5% of our population are farmers. And that number is dropping, and it has a potential to really drop quite drastically. So I think that we need to think about that. 1.5% of our population are farmers. They're growing our food. If we don't have them, what are we going to eat?
Got it's more a comment, suggestion from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Said, the listener said, with 90% of what Hoosiers eat being imported from out of state, it not only benefits the environment, reduction of food miles via transportation, but the local economy and communities to support local food systems by spending dollars at farmers markets and small farm stores. Another method to achieve this is by supporting local cooperatives such as the Hoosier Harvest Market in Hancock County and Market Wagon in Indianapolis. Fresh local products to your door, CSAs, are a wonderful opportunity to support local farmers. Sherry, you're smiling.
Well, I'm on the board of Hoosier Harvest Market. I'm wondering who that person is, because I probably know that person too. But it's true. We actually import 90% of our food that we eat here in the state. And I think right now we're about the 10th most productive agricultural state in the nation. So something, again, is really, really wrong with the fact that we are this productive as an agricultural state and we're not actually growing the food we eat.
And we've got another listener question that says simply, along these lines, if I want to purchase food from a local farmer, how do I do it? Is a Saturday morning farmer's market my only option?
It's probably your best option. And not only going to the farmer's market and purchasing the food is good. I think the best part is you can have a conversation with the people that are growing your food. You can talk about the techniques they use. You get a chance to meet their kids, meet their family, see the people that you're supporting. You might pay a little bit extra for that produce that you would at a big box store or another grocery store, but there is a value in that. And go to the farmer's market. That's your best opportunity to not only get produce and support a farm, but to meet the people that are growing your food.
We're talking about farmers.
I just want to jump in.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, right. I mean, the farmers market is a great spot to go. I think that's a good, like, introductory spot for people who are just wanting to get to know their farmers. If you're looking to save money, if you're on a budget, usually a CSA is a great option because you pay up front. And so that will be, so if you've kind of already gotten into this, you may know what a CSA is, but basically everyone pays for their produce up front, pays the farmer, which mitigates the risk for the farmer. And then you can pick up a weekly share, which is a really great way to get food directly from your farmer and help grow these vital local economies.
We are talking about farms and farming in anticipation of the new documentary film, the premiere of it, Farmers for America. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Marion has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marion, you're on the air. We're getting close to the end, though.
John?
Yes.
Hi, I didn't understand you. Yes, I'm Marion, and I'm a vegan. I'm a member of the Indiana Farmers Union, and so I'm not against farming at all. But I've spent a lot of time with the Interim Study Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources concerning the impact of the confined animal feeding operations on Indiana, and they're still just tweaking the regulations. We need a moratorium. The confined animal feeding operations are doing so much harm to our local communities, and it's important to pay attention to the federal rules, but we really need help getting a moratorium on the construction of the confined animal feeding operations. I'm a vegan. Animals aren't commodities and all that, but this is so important, and I'm hoping to go to the annual Indiana Farmers Union. So thank you so much for having this. And just
certainly.
Certainly.
Thanks very much for the call, Marion.
Okay, bye-bye.
Sherry, real quickly, what are you doing at the state level?
I think I've seen her before at the hearings that are at the State House. We are working with, like I said, I'm on the Agriculture Advisory Council with the Humane Society of the United States. And so our state director is Erin Wong, and she is wonderful about letting us know when those hearings are taking place and getting us into the State House to be able to participate in those. HEC, the Hoosier Environmental Council, is actually holding a lot of, there's one on November 4th. It's in Hamilton County, I believe. And look that up online because they're having some confined animal feeding operation discussions, some educational programming that's going on. We're talking about maybe holding screening another film that's about this issue to be able to educate the public and to be able to make sure that we're going to bat for the people who want us to go to bat. So I think she should come to the event that we're having a convention on November 18th. It's going to be a tax man Fortville. And we're going to talk about, you know, those issues are what our members want us to see us doing at the state level.
We're out of time. That'll have to be the last word. Just remind everyone, though, that the premiere of the film is this Thursday and Friday at 7 p.m. Food starts being served at 6 p.m. at the Indiana City Market, and the cost is $10 to attend. I'd like to thank my guests, Graham Merriweather, Sherry Duggar, and Tyler Goff, for what has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Also like to welcome all of our listeners to come back Thursday, when we're going to be talking about the Holocaust, remembrance, and social justice. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.